Greenwashed with Jaspreet Bopparai and Don Nicholson is back on RCR.
And the United Nations and World Economic Forum is pushing the whole green energy scam. While they're expecting us on one hand to be good and live like monks, they're actually out there doing massive damage to bring us this green energy.
Greenwashed.
Everything is misinformation. Began from COVID misinformation, then became gender misinformation, racism. Now we are on to this. Climate denialism.
Greenwashed with Jaspreet Bopparai and Don Nicholson is back on RCR.
Human breathing is contributing to the greenhouse gas emission. Urging caution in the assumption that emissions from humans are negligible. So you're 3.8%, including all mechanical sort of processes. We're part of it. We're breathing.
Mondays 10 to 1 on RCR. Reality Check Radio.
In the house, we have the ladies back from Capiticam. We have Tanya and Kerry here with us. Good morning, ladies.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
So tell us, you were here a couple of weeks ago and we spoke about your forthcoming big public meeting. Did it go as you planned?
Actually, it went better than we planned because, I mean, when you're booking a venue like Southwoods, I mean, it's got a 474 seating capacity. When you advertise that, it's like, well, what if the people don't come, you know? But as it turned out, it went really well. It was almost a full house, which was really good for us. We invited the mayor. We invited the chief executive. They both came. We had a few councillors. Not sure
Excellent.
About the community board chairs. They never responded back. We know that one of them, the Raumati one, had a meeting on that night, so couldn't attend. But it was a full house, very supportive. And we had your Paul Brennan on. He was the last speaker. He did a really good job. A lot of support for RCR.
Excellent. That's what we like to hear. But it's great to hear that your councillors and others came along. And did you say just under 500 people there?
Yes.
Yeah. Did anyone walk out? Was the meeting peaceful? Was there heckling? What was it like?
There was one person who stood up and said, look, are you denying that climate change is a thing? And it's like, no, we acknowledge that the climate is constantly changing all the time. It goes in cycles. And that person stayed till the end. So,
excellent.
At one stage, Paul actually asked, does anybody here believe that that the climate is as bad as what it is? And I think that one person put their hand up again. So a lot of people are seeing through this narrative now. It's alarmist. And it's nowhere as bad
it's pushed out. Now, I perhaps need to back up the bus a bit for listeners who may not have heard you 2 weeks ago. This meeting that you're talking about this Monday morning is one that happened on the Kapiti Coast because this area has coastal adaptation zones, which means there are people around that coast who now might see their properties pretty much get devalued because of this modeling that's taking place. This modeling based on certain climate change models that should actually be thrown out of the window, but we have ideological zealots who stick to them grimly, hanging on for dear life, and they are now causing people to essentially lose their way of life, lose their homes, risk losing their insurance, face very high premiums, not be able to buy, sell their properties, and so on. That is, how many people's properties are impacted on the coast, or how many people are impacted by these adaptation zones?
Well, at the moment, everybody, so the whole population, which I think is around 58,000, between 56 and 58,000, we've all got these notations on our LIM reports with reference to Jacobs on it. So everybody is impacted now, whether you're actually on the coast or you're several kilometres back elevated on a hill. So we're all in the same boat.
One paintbrush. So LIM is your land information memorandum, and Jacobs, who Tanya just referred to, is a big international consultancy engineering firm based out of, I think it originates from the US, is in dozens of countries across the world, and somehow we in New Zealand have decided an American company has the expertise to tell us what's going to happen to a coast. Have I got that right?
Yes, pretty much. Absolutely. And the notation in everybody's limbs is headed coastal erosion and inundation. And then there's a paragraph that talks about, shall I read out what the
paragraph says? Sure. Yes, please.
So under coastal erosion and inundation hazards, the council holds a set of reports prepared by environmental engineering consultancy Jacobs New Zealand Limited, covering susceptibility and vulnerability assessments of the coastal areas of the district based on a range of sea level rise scenarios over periods of 30, 50 and 100 years. The council intends using these reports to inform future district plan work, which will consider any necessary changes to land use and subdivision controls in areas which may be affected.
Amazing. Meanwhile, they completely gloss over the fact that an iconic picnic spot, I was told, the wreck of the Hyderabad, now no longer is available there for people to see because the dunes have come back and covered it. So we're actually getting more, there's more of a buildup.
In the northern part of the coast. In the northern. So in the southern area, we're getting more erosion.
Mm.
But definitely in the northern, it's accreting. So we've got a whole mixture of things. But essentially, the Jacobs report, because they ended up going, the adaptation zones captured 2 kilometres from the coast inland, largely because they did not factor in any of the seawalls. And that is quite a factor going forward in government planning, is they talk about hard, we'll get onto that later, I guess, but they talk about long-term, they don't want us reliant on hard protective structures like seawalls or groynes or artificial reefs or anything like that. So, which is pretty incredible.
Mm. Well, so does that include that area? And I think I've driven down there quite a few times, but not in the last few years. The right on the coast, there's a main highway. Where Pai Kakariki area. Yeah. Does this include all that area?
Yes.
So
the councils have agreed initially to replace all those seawalls. Like ours is 40 years old in Raumati. Mm-hmm. That should have been replaced. That was only meant to be around about 20 years. So it's done a damn good job really.
Yeah.
They're going to replace it. They've agreed to replace it. But just as it is, no higher, nothing like that, even though they are so concerned about sea level rise. But there's the wording in the documents that we've been reading is if that wall fails, then that will be a trigger, and they don't plan, by the looks of it, from what it appears, they don't plan to then replace it again.
Mm.
That'll be it. If it fails...
Mm. So they're willing to sacrifice a road or something at the same time, a main highway like Highway 1. Are they prepared to sacrifice that by the sound of it?
It appears that way. Well, they'll start pulling back on infrastructure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Look, it's interesting. I mean, I read, I listened to Ian Harrison's presentation at the meeting, and I read his report. And there's some pretty basic things come out of there. I mean, it is interesting, though, that he admitted he's got a holiday home in the area, and he had not taken any notice, even though you guys have been sort of fighting this for 10 years. But he came up with the RCP 8.5 that we talk about being a 1 in 1,000 type year event at best, not 1 in 100, which is where you're being modelled. And he then talked about the bathtub effect being a useless concept, really, because... it doesn't adjust for tide and it doesn't adjust for artificial barriers. So it's far less accurate than the dynamic method that others, including Jacob, used.
Yes.
So basically, there's a whole lot of stuff. He just analysed within a couple of weeks of him getting interested, he could see all the faults. Yeah. And I thought, you know, you, no disrespect to the people who have been active before, but it does take a new way of presenting something, perhaps to get this through. And it's good that you've now got an ally like him.
Yes. Well, he's got some impressive credentials. You know, he's worked for the World Bank, for the International Monetary Fund, Reserve Bank. So, to have him on board and let us know that, you know, this doesn't make any sense, economically, that's pretty powerful.
It doesn't make any sense. And later in the morning, we're going to be playing an interview with a Professor David Dilley from Florida. And he will also have you, if you listen to it, wondering what the heck this is all about.
Yeah.
But now that's for later to listen to you. It's the seduction to make you listen to our show later on.
Don't you worry. We listen to everything.
Good. So, but Lynn's, where to next? I do see that on your website, which listeners is capiticam.com, there is a petition tab up there. And do you want to tell us more about the petition?
Yeah, sure. So we've got that petition up on our website for people to sign. We just want to stop the CAP process. We don't want it to be presented to council. We want it stopped right now. There was the Gateway project that the council were working on. Due to community pressure, that was actually halted. That was $6 million down the drain. This is over $4 million now and counting. But, you know, we can't afford this. Who is going to pay for it? So we want that stopped. What we're essentially saying is that we want everyone to unite and put pressure on council to stop this process, for everyone to write to the mayor, chief executive, councillors, MPs, everyone you can think of, because next year is election year. So we will know which councillors are voting for it if it gets to that stage, which ones are against it. And this is hugely harmful on the people of Kapiti.
Yep.
So we want it stopped before then. We want people to sign up to our CALM database to you know, keep up to date with what's happening. We do have a lot in the pipeline. We're not going to let this go through. We're going to do whatever we can in our power to stop it. So
interesting, from the meeting when the mayor spoke and was quite challenged, she agreed to get a second legal opinion on the limb notation, on the blanket limb notation on Kapiti residents' limbs.
Yeah.
That was going to take about a week. We're still waiting. This will be going into week two this week. So we're hoping to hear back from her quite soon. Crew also offered to get a second legal opinion.
Yes, so Crew had a good representation at our meeting. Luckily, the mayor took questions, and that's when we were able to have some really good feedback presented to her. And I think she got a bit of a shock that the people in the audience were actually more clued up than what she thought. We are waiting on that.
Because there are people now who are losing insurance, aren't they, on your coast?
We actually had a letter up on one of our slides from Tower, stating that someone who was living in, I think it was Eatwell Ave in Paraparaumu, they were denied insurance because of the coastal.
And this whole process.
Yes, yeah.
So it's been going on for so long. We spoke with Salima from Crew Coastal Ratepayers United last week, and this process has been on and on. It's like, you know, they go back and they come back again for round two here.
Yeah.
And this time, this has been outsourced. So you have a coastal advisory panel, CAP, to whom this whole agenda about the coastal adaptation zones and everything has been put out. They will be presenting a report to your council, and that is the report you want your councillors to not accept.
Yes.
Right?
That's right.
Yeah, because of the modelling, the basic assumptions there and so on. But now let's just get to the bigger picture, because, I sometimes feel I've been pretty vocal about saying it. There's a bigger agenda out there. There's a problem, reaction, solution.
It certainly is.
Yes.
Yeah. So often the problem is created for the solution that's already in place, their chosen solution. And the chosen solution here is what they call coastal adaptation or managed retreat. Now, at this point, there is this petition out there, and I'd urge anyone who's listening right now to please go to the Capiticom website, capiticom.com, hit the tab petition and sign up and support these guys. But along with that, there's another inquiry happening with this new government. And it almost seems like the old government. They have begun, they published this report last week on the 24th of May. They are saying they are leading an inquiry into climate adaptation to develop and recommend high-level objectives and principles for the design of a climate change adaptation model for New Zealand to support policy and legislation to address climate adaptation. You can find this on the parliament.nz website. It's simply termed Inquiry into Climate Adaptation. The submissions close midnight, 16th of June. So there's not a lot of time there, 20-odd days. But this new government has taken over the baton from James Shaw, who had begun this inquiry last year into managed retreats, and is going along. And I looked at the submissions that initially happened during under James Shaw, because he had begun this inquiry, and just a handful of people, just 160-odd entities submitted last year. Out of that, the biggest by far, the group was NGOs, 42. A quarter of the submissions were by NGOs, 12 were by EV, 6 by Crown entities, 12 by business groups, 11 by academics, 31 by councils, local government, and just 21 by individuals. That, to me, is a damning reflection of what democracy
is. They don't want to hear from individuals.
No, they don't.
I mean, 160 add submissions in any case for something that's going to fundamentally change life is bad enough. But to have most of them be NGOs, academics, government itself, and they have the goal.
All based on the premise that the climate change narrative is an absolute given. There's no questioning of that, it seems. I noticed in that feedback too, Jaspreet, 48 of them, of the 100 and whatever it was,
16,
were from Wellington. But they broke it down from area where everyone, you know, was responding from. So nearly half was from Wellington.
Well, of course, that's vintage. It's par for the course. Wellington is a machine that actually thrives on all this sort of stuff. And clearly they've had 30 years of getting legislation to protect themselves under the banner of legislated climate change. And yeah, I've sparred with some of the people that are in the authored some of these documents, and I want them to be held accountable for their lies, because they're actually lying to the communities at great cost. And you know, I've got the saying, and Jaspreet's heard me say that, you know, those of us that have been to Beijing and walked past Chairman Mao, I mean, I can see him blushing. I can see him lying there blushing that he's won the day with these people in New Zealand, Zealand. It's sad that we've been sucked into this vortex, that everything that comes out of Victoria University and that sort of area is perfect and right. Clearly, Minister Simeon Brown, Minister of Local Government, has told local government to pull its head in, and they don't seem to be taking any notice.
No, they don't. That's the scary part. We've actually asked, that's another thing that CALM is wanting, is the climate emergency, which was declared in 2019, to be revoked by council due to insufficient scientific evidence.
That's on our petition.
Yes.
Excellent.
And that's something too for people listening all around New Zealand. You know, do what we suggest is go and do an OIA to your council about the climate emergency, find out if they've got one, first of all. And if they have, ask for things like the minutes of meetings from councils where they adopted the term climate emergency, all the related email correspondence regarding it between councils, you know, and relevant parties. And what was the science underpinning the decision by council to declare a climate emergency? Ask those questions in an official OIA, because I think that'll be a very interesting tell, and puts the very least will make the councils think.
Yeah, and there was also no community consultation over that. They just declared it.
Well, we know ours was pretty much orchestrated by a group of college students led by a very active
councillor
student who's now a councillor.
Yes.
But if I could just go back to the council, we were asking so many questions a few months ago, our council wrote to the MFE and to DOC, and we've got the letters back, we've got copies of them, and so our council was trying to get verification from MFE about which level of extreme modelling they should use. And MFE have written back and said, no, the most relevant up-to-date science is to use RCP 8.5, or SSP as it's referred to now, in the equity social pathway system that's taken over RCP. So, you know, because of that, they're just continuing on. There's no questioning of it.
No, the point is there, as I said, the solution has already been created there. Looking at the submissions of that document, which they call coastal adaptation, but they go into this and speak about a retreat. This, for anyone who's wondering what you're talking about, this is a summary of submissions to last year's James Shaw's inquiry into coastal adaptation, which is now being taken over and National is going to run with it. In that, they talk about retreat. And they say out of the 160-odd people who submitted, all supported the development of a retreat system. More submitters agreed that land use should change following a retreat. And also, powers for land acquisition to control post-retreat land use were noted frequently because retreat must be enduring. And this, I think, is the kicker. They say decision makers need to be given some sort of protection from liability because they'll be acting in good faith using available evidence and following agreed and established protocols. They are not using available evidence. They are using the evidence that's favorable to their desired solution here.
Unquestioned.
But they make me, as Don said, make Chairman Mao blush. They talk about terminology in that summary report, and they say most submitters did not support the term used by the options paper called community-led retreat for varying reasons. These included that that decision-making is almost certainly sit at the local or central government level, so community-led is unlikely to accurately reflect the community involvement it implies. Ain't that the truth? Because there's nothing community about it. It's going to come down from the top and you just have to follow along. And they now want, many of the submitters said the preferred term would be planned relocation, not community-led managed retreat, because you're effectively relocating them. There's even submitters like the Royal New Zealand Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals.
I know.
Not saying livestock could be at risk. What do we live in now?
Yeah, that's right. Crazy.
One of the key changes that is people have to, you know, we need to start getting our head around is that it's gone from a focus on risk to life and property to a focus on well-being. And that's a key thing. So that can be biodiversity, socioeconomic factors, all sorts of things. And they've moved from a post-event adaptation scenario, so, you know, cleaning up after a disaster or whatever, to a pre-event adaptation model. They've flipped it, basically. So rather than waiting for looking to see that there's going to be an issue or there is a problem in a certain area, they are now going to, it's going to be about pre-empting. So if you're in an adaptation zone and a trigger is reached, they can then say, okay, that trigger's been breached. We're going to now put this into effect, this managed retreat.
And that could be your insurance being declined.
That
could be you getting a trigger.
Yeah. So that's a key thing, I think, that, it's gone from not just about life and property anymore, which is, it's always been about to the risk to well-being, and that can be well-being of anything, literally.
Totally, totally subjective as far as I'm concerned. But the concern that I have here is, if we can sort of package it up, is currently it's not mandated to actually do all this stuff. And yet local government and central government and all the grifters around the policy setting makers and some politicians are just wanting this to the noose to tighten. They want legislation. They want it to be really, really there. Sorry, have I got that wrong, Jaspreet?
No, no, you're absolutely right, Don. But the point is, they are just doing the spade work because they know that the regulation, thanks to this inquiry that's open into climate change that ends on 16th of June, they know they're getting the spade. They're just doing the spade work for what is ultimately planned to come down the pipeline. That is why they're not stopping, because they know this government will completely back them, and then they will have, you know, everything ready, press go, and we are done here.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why you're concerned. And so am I, by the way, that Simon Watts is appearing to be just continuing, as you say, took over the baton from James Shaw, and it's just carrying on. It's disappointing.
Yes. I mean, this was last week, bipartisan agreement. Simon Watts ended his speech in Parliament. Megan Woods stood up, said, yep, we agree with the colleagues across the House. All then and dusted, and you just wonder that, hey, I thought the government changed recently. We were supposed to get some sense into the science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very disappointing to see that they're not. Yeah,
and that was hard to watch, actually, wasn't it?
And in this part of the big basis of this report of the working group on managed retreat, there's a whole big section in there about the powers and how they now want to. Basically, they'll set up a separate crown entity which will have special powers, which include things like being able to cancel the title on your land if you are pegged for managed retreat. So you won't have a choice. They'll just cancel your title. And they discuss, there's a whole section in there. It's very difficult to read, quite frankly, because it's basically a land grab. It's what it amounts to, all in the name of a preemptive planning on something that is based on extreme scenario of climate change.
Divide and rule is still alive and well there, I see. Yes. The governments in the last few years have divided us, pitted us against each other, and it continues here. They talk about a treaty-based approach, and they say, submitters supported the creation of a managed retreat system under which the ownership of Whenua Māori would not change, but the others would be transferred
everybody
to the central government.
That's obviously the extreme.
And what I will still see is the ordinary Māori is not going to get any benefit out of it, but it will pit people against each other. The iwi might retain some of their wealth. I would say they will definitely retain all of their wealth, but the ordinary Kiwis, you just end up infighting, whereas no one is better off here. None of us.
No.
Oh. Well,
Sorry,
Tani, you carry on.
With the local iwis here, all of them apart from one have voted for a managed retreat.
Of course they have.
Well, we've got five coastal adaptation areas, and their preference, preferred pathway is managed retreat for each of those areas.
100%.
And of course, banks and insurers want everybody else to pick up the tab for things. I mean, there is no doubt some areas will have issues, as they always have.
Of course,
You know, there's flooding, there's all sorts of stuff happens.
We're well used
plains.
To large storms on our, on our coast. You know,
of course
we've lived with them for,
And so this, to me, is a way for insurance companies and banks to sort of find someone else to pay their take up their risk. Disappointing. Actually, just as an aside, a couple of days ago, I happened to, and Jaspreet sent me this link of a guy over the hill from you in Hutt giving a submission to his council and exposing everything that's in their long-term plan for this year and the next 10 years. And what he did is he went back to 3 years ago and previous plans and showed the cost blowouts. And some of them were like factors of 10 in 3 or 4 years. Mm. I mean, you see who's wanting to grow the business here, don't you?
Yeah.
You see
it. We're one of the most indebted councils in the country.
Yeah.
You know, and Ian Harrison's report, he did the cost-benefit analysis, and it's in the billions to if they want to actually go ahead with this coastal adaptation area and the pathways plan that they're planning on.
Mm. Mm.
We can't afford it.
Mm.
Well, and they talk about intergenerational equity. So debt creates that. And so you max out the credit card. There's no equity left then, there is, because you did it all back in 2024 and there's nothing for 2054. So just horrible how this feeding machine called local government just keeps sucking it all in until they've maxed it all out. And
yeah.
So I take my hat off to you people that are standing up in your local communities, trying to get some common sense back in the community, actually, because a lot of people are not aware, and yet, you know, you've shown by the meeting you had recently, 400 or 500 people turn up, and there is people in that crowd who didn't have any idea what you've been batting for up to 10 years. So it is an education process, but we're running out of time. We're running out of time.
There's one thing I would like to emphasize in this document is the role of the private sector, and I'll read this out from the summary document. It says that the majority of submitters to last year's Shaw's inquiry suggested that banks and insurers are key private sector actors that can support adaptation outcomes.
Yes.
The availability of lending and insurance are important contributors. Of course they are. If I don't get a mortgage or insurance, we make different decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's this quote from Stephen Ritter that says, by pricing risk and sending clear market signals, bank and insurers can have a profound effect at individual level and may lead to a reduction of investment in areas of high risk. So we are now going to, it's like the wagons are circling. You've got center government, you've got your local government, you've got your banks, you've got your insurance. Yes. Gosh. And now we have this inquiry being led by this new government, closes on 16th of June. And what are the chances that they are going to find in favor of coastal adaptation mandating it?
Scary stuff.
Mm. And all to keep us safe.
Yes. Look after our well-being.
Prove our well-being.
Yes.
It's so just. It's so kind.
I can hear the sarcasm dripping there, Dawn. Drip, drip, drip. But so two actionables right now would be, number one, you want people to go to your website, capitycalm.com, and sign the petition?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
If they live in the Kapiti region.
Yeah.
Or own property here, obviously.
Okay. You have a deadline for that?
We've got holiday homes up here.
When is your coastal adaptation panel, when is it going to be presenting its finding to the council? Is there a due date when it goes to council?
No, we haven't heard yet. So
okay.
We'll keep the petition going. And then when we do present it to council, we're going to ask for as many people as can come along to just stand outside, you know.
A peaceful protest
about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And the other thing I would urge people is go to the parliament.nz website and look at this inquiry into climate adaptation that was published on the 24th of May. This one closes on 16th of June, and this is the one that's going to mandate now all councils to force climate adaptation zones on their constituents. And we are a coastal country. That could be pretty much everyone, you know.
And it's not just coastal; it's any hazard.
Any risk.
Yeah. Although interestingly, they hardly ever talk about earthquake risk anymore.
No,
it seems to have dropped off the radar. But that is, for Kapiti at least, that is the most likely scenario by a long shot.
Even though we've got five. Fault lines.
And we've got clear. Oh, and very briefly, the other thing that is a major change is that they no longer seem to be wanting to look at historical climate data, which we've got really good data for the coast. They've been measuring it, and of course the tide gauges around the country, which is showing no perceptible sea level rise apart from a couple of millimeters a year for the last decade. Several decades, so it's they're not really interested. And somebody from the CAT a cat meeting, actually, a cat person actually told us this recently, that that sort of, they sort of likened it to solar century, you know, to consider the climate, the actual climate data.
Of
They're
course, they are
the future, and it's all about the modelling. And we know that there is so many faults with modelling. Even the best models will be can be way out, as much as, you know, three times or more out.
Absolutely, so, this is modelling has always been the tool of tyrants. But we are running out of time here, ladies. No doubt we'll be hearing more of this as time goes past. But if you've joined us this morning, please go to the Capticom website, sign the petition, go to parliament.nz, put in a submission to this inquiry on climate change. Let's hear your voices. Thank you so much for coming in again today. And we'll be in touch. We'll be watching
Thank
what
you so
Thank
much.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye-bye. We'll be back in a moment with Greenwashed. This is Just Read the Dawn, 2057. For any feedback, our inbox at the rate realitycheck.radio.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.